You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Welcome again to The Purple Mystic podcast for the modern witch. Today I am talking again with Utu Witch Doctor. How are you today?
I am doing great. Enjoying a hot summer's day here in Niagara.
Yeah, if we can keep the connection, we'll be good. So today, last time I had you on, we talked a little bit about your book and the use of the Underground Railroad imagery. Today, I wanted to bring up a topic that we kind of touched on, but didn't really talk a lot about, which was sacred drumming. Because you are a drummer by trade and profession, correct?
I am a drummer by trade and profession, I suppose, yes.
So one of the things that we had talked about was how I know for myself when I'm in a drum circle or something of that nature, it really has the ability to shift consciousness. And we talked a little bit about, you kind of mentioned a little bit about drums being almost a living thing and that you have to feed the drum, care for it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that today, what that means, what all that entails, and how you can use the beat of the drum to shift your consciousness and move into a oneness with the universe.
Okay, sure. When we really think about it, the drum via percussion is probably one of the oldest instruments known to humanity, like since at least as far as we've measured in this existence of humans. It's always been a big part of, and it is a big part of, every single culture, every single corner of this world. So every culture, whether it's in the Arctic or in the jungles, deserts, forests, everywhere in this world, there's a sacred drum akin to that culture. And so that alone intonates that it's a very crucial part of humanity for, what you said, consciousness, in and out, providing the structure for ceremony, for, you know, ritual, for pageantry. It's always present. And so, you know, the drum, at least for myself and most modern people, if they think about it this way, it's an extension of our spirit. At least it can be. It doesn't have to be. It can just be an instrument, depending on the genre of music. But in ritual music, like I play for the most part, and like most of the colleagues and contemporaries like ourselves, you know, there's a spiritual side to what we're doing. And therefore, when we're spiritual people who break down a lot of, you know, concepts and different levels of what it is that we use, maybe it's a wand or a blade or any nature of things we use for ritualistic purposes, the drum in and of itself is a tool. And then when you're in a sacred tradition or a ritualistic tradition, regardless of what the culture is from, you'll find as you go deeper into the mysteries of whatever that culture's drum is that it's actually treated as a vessel to be an intermediary connection between your spirit in general, and sometimes very specific drum spirits. And so if you have something that is, you know, of that nature, then yeah, you want to treat it as a sacred instrument. Doesn't mean you have to baby it and not let it get a ding here or there, but that's why for someone like me, I have multiple drums for various purposes. Ones I only play outside, ones I play inside, various ones for different types of drumming or traditions. But if we treat the drum as a sacred vessel, a place that not only allows what we're doing physically and our movement to create that sound, not only is it amplifying, but it's a conduit that brings in spirit as well. So there, it's an interesting little, almost like a crossroad within where the noise comes out the mouth of the drum.
And for me, it's always been akin to like a heartbeat. You know, it almost represents like the heartbeat of humanity and in that way connects us. And I know in some of the studying I've done, they talk about like how certain beats at certain frequencies actually resonate across the human spectrum. But it's not just our heartbeat, it's everything. Everything that lives, you know, every animal has a heartbeat. So to me, it's kind of a connection, I guess would be a good way to put it.
There's a far memory in every one of us. And I guess to some degree, most animals, depending on how they're born, but let's just stick with humans now. We are in our mother's womb for 9 months. And for those 9 months, as we are, you know, growing from that little embryonic entity to become, you know, a day away from exiting out and crying out here in the realm, we are hearing nothing but that constant sound of the heartbeat, fluids going. It's a cacophony of sounds of the heartbeat, fluids. It's completely rhythmic, and it is sort of why I think we're very drawn and very connected to the drum as humans. And one thing for certain is, at least in the voodoo tradition I belong to, or more than one of them, I have witnessed this over my many years, is, you know, fresh. So in our traditions, you know, it's very family oriented. We're getting together for whatever reason. And quite often, there's a woman who is showing up with her fresh baby, like it got born yesterday, 2 days ago. And because they're very adherent to our religion, they're coming there for the purpose of the baby being blessed, or just to show up and say, hey, everybody, you know, check it out. And everyone's, you know, going, oh, yeah, what a lovely little baby. And I've seen it many times where there's a ceremony happening, so therefore drums are going to be happening. And the baby might have been a little, you know, cryy, or it's just awake and looking. And as soon as those drums started, to what most people would be like, wow, it's loud in here, that baby sleeps. And I've watched it many times where the little area is set up on the floor, and so that the mother, or the mother and the father, are having a good time, or there to enjoy what was happening, the baby is sleeping. And then, you know, it's natural. And so if a child hears the drums very soon after coming out of the womb and being birthed into this world, I've seen it countless times where that child is nurtured and relaxed by the loud drums and will sleep through an entire ritual of like 5 or 6 people pounding 2 drums each. So it's very unique. I've seen it a lot of times. And so just to show how it's, like you said, it's comforting, it's relaxing, it's nurturing. It reminds us of that far memory of the womb.
Very much so. And you mentioned a minute ago that you have multiple drums, many drums. So let's talk a little bit about how the different types of drums are used traditionally, because I know you mentioned that the djembe is a war drum, but a lot of people like to have it and use it. And how can we incorporate these things into a daily practice? What should you do if you want to incorporate it more into a practice?
One of the best things a person can do is get a small, quiet drum. You know, something that isn't going to be heard if being played by other drums. That's at least one way, because I think for a lot of folks, they, you know, they attract it to a drum, maybe it's a djembe, congas, you know, things of this nature. And, you know, it's loud. And so even if you live in a house, like, I mean, I do here in St. Gaudens, but I have neighbors on either side of me. They don't care. They've been conditioned. But there's times where I want to, if I'm really going to practice going crazy on my djembe, I'm conscious that it's being heard. Other drums, not so much. But no matter what, I have ones in here that no one will hear me play. And that's the same for apartment buildings. People live in, you know, cohabitating and, like, you know, a flat above them, one below them. So the best thing a person can do is get something that's small and quiet. And these can be some of the most archaic looking things, you know, ones that have fur on the tops of them. People would think, oh, this is no good. But if you tap it and you can get some sound, it helps, because at least therefore you're making sounds and practicing your rhythm without making a great deal of noise. And then that's just one thing a lot of people can do to sort of get started a little bit. But ultimately, they have to choose a drum that speaks to them if they're not in a tradition that is sort of saying, well, we play these drums, this is what you have to learn. That's happened to me many times where I thought, oh, I'm already a trained drummer in Lakumi. And now all of a sudden, I eventually run into, you know, going back about 15 more years ago, I run into the entire Nigerian Ifa tradition I became immersed in and initiated in. Oh, they play completely different drums. You know, they play sakara and they play talking drums and bata drums, which are very different than the bata drums in Cuba. So, you know, all of a sudden I'm forced, you know, you have to learn to play these drums. So it's just good to practice our skill, play something that's quiet that gives us the idea of how to play. And then ultimately a person needs to decide. I mean, it's not a very purist thing to say, but for people that are outside or going to events and festivals, it almost always is good to get one that has a synthetic head, especially if somebody, because there's an entire mastery of tightening and caring for a natural head djembe, right? As you probably know, there's the roping to it. You have to, you know, keep it a certain tightness. You go outside, if it's a nice drum you spent a couple $100 on and you don't know how to store it outside or taking it to some strange climate, it dramatically changes it, can affect the wood. Next thing you know, you're replacing the head. And so while that's a beautiful sound and natural, sometimes it's best to have a synthetic head, you know, which are the Remo. The most popular ones are Remo or Toca drums that have, you know, fiberglass or synthetic heads of some kind, which sound just fine. The bodies are usually fiberglass and can, you know, take a little ding here or there. And while I have definitely encountered people that thought those drums possessed no ability to house spirit, I would not only argue myself, but my mentors who would say, well, no, it's not what the drum is made of. Of course, there's something unique about having organic wood, organic goat skin. There's a sanctity to that, and there's a tradition to it. Absolutely. But it doesn't negate that even a synthetic Remo or a synthetic Toca drum can also be just as sacred. It's up to you to make it the intermediary vessel.
Right.
For the sense.
And I know there are people that would be opposed to those natural materials just because of their personal beliefs as far as animals and that go. I mean, I'm a realistic person. Well, I don't want to say they're unrealistic, but my daughter is a vegan and I am not. I mean, I understand the sacred use of animal parts in a practice and I'm not opposed to it. I understand not everything can be ethically sourced either. So yeah, but it's good to know that if that's in your line of thinking, it's not something that's totally out of the realm of usability for you, because I know a lot of people that kind of stray away from it because of that specific side of things.
It's very true. A lot of vegans I have known in my time that were drummers eventually said, I can't keep this drum anymore because it has this type of head on it and stuff. And I know a couple that said, I don't care. This drum means too much to me. And so it's true. You know, it goes both ways, right? However, you know, that's a personal choice.
Right.
You know,
right.
Most traditionalists, where most drums come from, don't recognize that, but it doesn't matter. You know, there is no sort of gatekeeping, no sort of orthodoxy as to what, again, I say this as a person who has trained with some of the more renowned drummers in the world, who are either from Africa or Indonesia, here in America, Caribbean, Europe, like they're friends, colleagues, some of them are, you know, royalty when it comes to actual royalty of drum traditions, especially from Nigeria. And they have no issues with Remos or any of these things. It's what you do and the sound you provide in the specific way that you were asked to provide it. And again, if inclement weather arrives, which it does, and I've been there many times, whether it's in Florida or Texas, Louisiana, here in Ontario, where there was a very large ceremony happening, specifically in Voodoo and or Lukumi, and weather was clearly going to be an issue. And therefore, those of us that had our Remos were able to fulfill our obligation outside in the rain while the rest of it happened. So, you know, there's a pragmatism to it, too.
Right, right. Well, in Texas especially, it's very, very humid. I know having been in band and school and that kind of thing, I know that the weather here dramatically affects a lot of different types of instruments, especially those made with wood. Like my daughter plays cello, my other daughter plays violin. So you have to really protect it
in yes.
this kind of changing heat. And the weather here changes on a dime. So absolutely. How did you get into drumming? I mean, when you look back at little Utu,
I once was little
years ago, did you see yourself? Did you wake up one day and go, I'm going to be a drummer?
Pretty much. Started now again. It doesn't matter how old I am, but when I was a little child, I had a monkey's drum kit. Remember those little miniature drum kits?
Yes, yes, yes.
From our, you know, I don't know what generation you are, but I was obsessed with that thing.
The same generation, I'm pretty
sure. Yeah. So I had the Monkees drum kit, and that's because my father was a drummer. Because I was born in Scotland, so I was born in Scotland, moved here when I was very, very young to Canada. But my father was already a drummer in a particular type of a marching band that comes out of Scottish culture. And so my whole life growing up was his drum that he used in the parades and the shows. And I gravitated to drumming immediately. Always wanted to drum, loved drumming, and, you know, was obsessed with it as a little child. Now, in those types of bands in Scottish culture, it's quite common to have the kids in the families decked out in the gear, you know, and they're play. I started out playing a triangle, as you know, I had to go to the practices, you know, I'm like 8 years old, hitting the triangle at a specific time. Then you move up to the cymbals, and you know, sometimes you carry a banner, whatever it is that they, you know, get you in there. And then, you know, as I got a little older, then I was, you know, as most kids of our generation, then, you know, Kiss, you know, and Peter Criss on the drums, you know, I was, you know, fascinated by that as well. So I was a drummer. Eventually also played guitar professionally for many, many years, but drumming was always a big thing for me. And so what happened was 90s, you know, world music, that whole scene sort of came out in that sort of early 90s grungy world. And I was already had a few drums from around the world because I liked them and I was really interested in that and going to drum circles and loving it. And then I eventually, what happened was I walked in and stumbled upon a Sumerian magical tradition that had a coven here in Ontario, of all places, where I was living. I just walked into a store one day and was like, what is this, witches? And they were from the one priestess was from Texas. And so, you know, our tradition was centered out of Texas. And I don't know if you know the particular rowdy brand I'm speaking of, but the Sumerian family tradition, there were once a big, you know, part of the community in Dallas and Fort Worth area, Houston as well. So my very first pagan experience, like on a large scale, before I saw any pagan event here in Ontario, was going to the Council of the Magical Arts in Dripping Springs, Texas. And so I was already told that the Sumerians, we had a tradition of drumming. So I went to Texas carrying a couple of these kooky drums that I had, which were like, you wouldn't even hear them being played unless, you know, you were in the room. But that's what I had. They weren't going to be super loud. And I got down there, and that's the first time I saw the djembe and at a fire circle and was like, whoa. And by the end of that trip, came home with the djembe. And so, yeah, all the Sumerian people in our tradition had them, were selling them. And so, you know, then I just became immersed in that. And because there was a purpose to play the drum in our tradition, which was unique, I loved it. And then I just eventually stumbled into, like usual, the Voodoo Spiritual Temple, a Lakumi tradition here in Ontario, the Voodoo Spiritual Temple in New Orleans. And so once again, I was, you know, enamored, invited to provide some of the service because it was something that I was good at. You know, it was essentially, you know, a pretty, you know, well-known drummer at that point. And I had a couple of guys around me who also were, you know, different ethnicities, and we were really good together. And so pre-internet-ish, you know, I just started getting invited to events and events, meaning events like religious ones, where there just must have just been some sort of a gap between generations. Maybe there wasn't, you know, because there's not any lacking in people, but there are in some spots. Even right now in 2021, there are African traditional religious groups that are people out of all colors that are in various parts of the continent that are through lineage attached to their main ile. I'll just use Lakumi as an example. And yet there is nobody that's proficient in drumming. They only get to experience that part when they're with their, you know, their main house. So this is where I filled in that blank with some of my people. There was people wanting it, and once they had availability to it, this is where we got. And eventually, you know, just became invited in to be initiated into those mysteries because there was more drumming needed behind the closed door, so to speak. And, you know, and that's just how I ended up in that world. I would never have been immersed in Ifa, voodoo, conjure, root work, any of these African traditional religions if I wasn't a drummer. And it's because I was asked to enter into it because of my talent. And then because I was, you know, very apt at wanting to provide it more, eventually was invited in. And so, you know, that's how I ended up even in these traditions. If it wasn't for the drum, I don't imagine I ever would have wandered into the African traditional religions. I don't understand what would have been a reason for me to do it, but That's how I ended up in there.
But you found your home. And it was more than just a skin color or background tradition, because being Scottish, I'm sure people are like, so I have to bring up the big elephant in the room then, you know, along with the whole, and I think you and I talked about that when we talked about your book, the whole cultural appropriation thing. Have you had a lot of people, or have you had people who have come at you for using a drum like the djembe? Because I've had people say, you shouldn't touch that, that's not for you, even though I really like it. So I'm kind of curious as to what your experience has been as far as people saying, well, you shouldn't use this type of instrument if it's not within your culture, blah, 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 blah.
Never experienced it. If anybody felt that way, they didn't have the courage to say it to me, that's for sure, in person at least. I have spent better part of 20 years as one of the most public, if not the most public, pagan, as well as foot in the African traditional religions, a public drummer. I spend a majority of the year pre-COVID traveling and across this continent at some of the biggest events. I serve some of the more renowned clergy and lineages, whether it comes from the royal court in Yorubaland, royal court in Ghana, esteemed lineages of Palo Mayombe, Lokumi, American Voodoo. These are all traditions run by either Africans or people of color. And in those, every religion I just mentioned is not even American, right? The Lokumi, Palo, we'll just use those, and Voodoo, is they're Caribbean religions. And for whatever reason, the difference in the Caribbean culture, which most of course has slavery, but whatever reason, their society was built a little different once slavery was a collapsed system. You know, the indentured servants, even to some degree the colonizers and the formerly enslaved, formed their cosmopolitan community. So there is no issue. You won't find very many people that have esteemed lineages from any of these religions that don't want people of every... Now, I can speak on behalf of Ifa, that comes out of the Yorubaland, Nigeria. They want as many people from around the world as possible to recognize, exalt, and glorify the Orisha, their sacred elevated deities. They feel their religion is dignified enough. I would agree. Now, the difference would be that they don't want people to, you know, pretend to be the clergy in those religions, but they most absolutely want people, if it is the calling and the right purpose, divination will determine that, to be a member or a supporter of the religion. So you will never find a drummer anywhere in any culture, if they're a legitimate one that has been taught by somebody that has some emoticon of common sense in this world, to say you can't play certain instruments. That's the most asinine. Anytime you see anyone say something like that, you can make a judgment on them as being ignorant on so many levels, because the only reasons we have many have pushed so much of our society here in North America, at least, and for the better part of the Western world, musicians were the ones who broke those boundaries. When it was a literal apartheid or segregation in the southern United States, white musicians and black musicians played together. That's what jazz was. Jazz was born in Louisiana in Congo Square because of the weekly Sunday gatherings that was predominantly the Africans, whether they were free people of color or the enslaved. That was their day to trade food. Slaves had to grow their own food, of course, and no one was feeding them. So that was the day off. At least, you know, that's how they did it in the Catholic tradition of colonize. You know, they let people have that one day off. And the indentured servants in the city were the Irish, for the most part. And they played a fiddle. And at some point, that is what happened. In that time, somebody breached the other side of the square, which was a big circle, and fusion of music happened, which is what gave birth to jazz. Jazz was born in New Orleans, and jazz is what gave birth to rhythm and blues. And then rhythm and blues circulating throughout the African-American community is where bluegrass was then, you know, offshoot of that to eventually have rock and roll. All through the jazz era, the rhythm and blues and the rock and roll era, early rock and roll, was taboo for these musicians to sing and play together. Ultimately, music will be always the way that you will mostly always be invited to collaborate or interact with a religion that's not of your culture, no matter what. That goes for Scottish culture. That goes for Asian culture, you know, just there's other parts of the world, you know, with, they all also have their own cultures, their own, you know, traditions of sacred music. It doesn't matter. You know, if you want to learn to play bagpipes and march in a bagpipe band, then you got to go through a particular gauntlet, learn a few things, understand a few things, and you're in, because you've dedicated an immense amount of work to learn a talent to help promote and uphold a culture. So I have thankfully never encountered anyone stupid enough to say you can't play a specific drum because it's based on a culture. But I understand in America, to some degree, this is the kind of asinine things that are starting to happen. No one will laugh more than people from those continents, from those cultures, who make a living teaching, selling, and encouraging people of other nations and other colors to enter into the drum mystery of that drum. So if some woke idiot is trying to say don't do it, they're ignorant in a lot of things.
Go out and do it. Biggest djembe I can find and bang away. So let's talk a little bit about the rhythms of drumming and how, I guess what I'm wanting to know is, because this is a learning journey for me, I've always loved percussion, but I've never actually played a percussion instrument. So my question would be, do the different rhythms have a different meaning, particularly in any specific tradition? But in general, do you feel like, because I have noticed that you can see a difference, like when I would go to the powwows when we were visiting in New Mexico, and there's a lot of drumming going on there, you see a change in the people, in the whole atmosphere and the energy as the drum beat would change, signaling a different type of dance that was beginning. So what has been your experience, or what can you share with the audience about how those rhythms are used in a pagan path?
Yeah, so I obviously find a lot of similarity sometimes from traditional Scottish drumming, which is either going to be that sort of militaristic Highland era of things, and then the more folk Scottish drumming, which is going to be more the traditional bow run and more Celtic or Pictish influenced. So, but there is a similarity in that and the African traditional rhythms that I have learned to be a keeper of. So yes, they're essentially stories, right? So certain drums and certain types of drums and presented have a better ability sometimes for expression. And so therefore you'll find, you know, for example, you mentioned the powwows, that's going to be similar to similar to Highland gatherings, where people that recognize certain drum beats with other instruments playing evokes a certain type of a dance. You know, it's a different type of a Highland dance. It has a story because the people in the culture know, oh, they're singing this song about that time the English killed us all and that one particular day, or this is when we gave it to them good and kicked their ass. Like, or we're celebrating, oh, this is one of those ancient songs that celebrates the mysterious woman of the water who takes men and, you know, steals his heart. Like, whatever, if you know your culture, you hear it. And of course, it evokes something. Sometimes it celebrates old war songs. This is what we chanted and this is what we sung and played before we went into battle. But, you know, these are things that, of course. Now, for the drums that most of us play, like djembes, they're so unique. And the reason they've taken off, as well as the Middle Eastern dumbek, is because of the versatility. You know, there's that bass drum in the middle, boom, and at the edge of the head, the tack. Both drums have this ability to talk, and so it can sound very expressive. And therefore, you know, in the New Orleans Voodoo Spiritual Temple, of which I've been a member for 20 years, the drum calls of that temple are called the Order of Service. So the Order of Service is essentially drum stories to help evoke and invoke the presence of specific entities, or the specific concept of that entity within you, to help provide in the ceremony the foundation and the example set that the drums will never deviate. The core is playing, even if there's only two or three of us, we're playing this specific way so that priestess will feel comfortable to sing and to, you know, encourage people to move around, you know. And so whatever the fluidity that's happening, depending on the type of ceremony is going on amongst the dancers or the attendees or the observers, the drums are always the ones holding it down. And then, you know, when it's time to stop that rhythm, then we play the next one, which is always sort of like it's a series of invocations So we specifically play a rhythm to honor ancestors right off the bat, ancestors of this land, our ancestors, the ancestors of the tradition we all belong to, you know. Then we'll play the rhythm for the specific spirit of the crossroads, who now opens up the space and allows, you know, the blessings, opens the doors, so to speak, to allow the blessings of the other entities we're going to reach. He's the gatekeeper. And then eventually we play the next song, which will be the one who clears the obstacles of the roads open and gives us strength. And this, you know, it goes on and on like this. So most assuredly, these all have, and especially, you know, in Lukumi, Santeria, as most people know it by, you know, such elaborate, beautiful dancing. So when you're dancing for Eshu, or you're dancing for, you know, Ogun, or you're dancing for Opatala, there's a specific thing they'll wear, a specific way the men or the women dance, and to a specific rhythm. It's very, you know, to the point where it becomes performance art, you know, and it is literally provided as performance in many places, which is another way to share the culture, share the religion. Afro-Cuban jazz, I mean, that's what my band, the Dragon Ritual Drummers, do. We were just at a jazz festival here, and we've played a lot of folk festivals, jazz festivals, drum festivals, and so everyone understands. These guys are representing some weird drumming tradition, and so in between songs, you know, I talk about this rhythm is honoring this entity. This rhythm honors this culture. This rhythm honors these drums, and we play them, and that's how you educate people and turn them on to, you know, the idea of unified drum community. There is no more unique group of people, as you know, at drum circles. It's going to be the most ethnically diverse, the most, you know, unifying experience. So when people are trying to impede that, I don't even pay attention.
Yeah, definitely. So talk a little bit about the Dragon Ritual Drummers. How did you guys meet up and form up, and how many of you are there? What's it like when you all get together at a gathering?
Well, we don't really know exactly how many of us there are. So the band literally started in year 2000. So we are 21 years old now. We've had various members over the years, but the unique thing is our members all come from the Niagara Pagan Men's Circle. So there's a men's circle that runs out here in the Niagara region once a month for the last 26 years. And so a few years into it, because drumming was already a part of the things we enjoyed, we had decided to throw together some kind of, like, within the members of the group, you know, an orchestrated performance to honor the sort of horned serpent legacy of Niagara Falls by the once now extinct, you know, native tribe that was there. That was routed at one point by the Iroquois, and then was abandoned region for a bit on the Canadian side till the French got here. But either way, you know, it's a legacy that still is kind of adhered to some degree. And so we're like, let's do something about this sort of dragon energy. And everything we did was meant to be for, like, one performance. And then it went really well, and people liked it. And then just immediately, strangely enough, this guy we knew who was one of the main DJs on a rock station here in St. Catharines invited us to come on, you know, and do something drumming on the, you know, morning show, because they were looking for something weird to do. And that exploded. And then we're like, well, this is getting weird. And so we're like, well, you know what? Let's just record the CD of everything we've rehearsed thus far. And then surely that would make this all go away, right? We record a CD. There it is. That's probably how we make the stop, right? Yeah, right. Record the CD, sell a bunch of them like crazy. Next thing you know, we're getting multiple runs. And then we're like, do we need to record another? Now we're asked to perform at events. So, you know, 20 years later, you know, we still get our members specifically from our Niagara Pagan Men's Circle. So that means that none of our drummers, shy of myself, right now we have about three guys who are legitimately musicians, but majority of the time over the years, none of the guys were trained in any sort of prior music or anything. They just, you know, gravitated to it. We're in our circle. That's where we get our members from. So we have definitely built our band as a tribe in and of itself. So it's like a fraternity from our group. That's our lodge. And so whenever we perform somewhere, you know, it's demonstrating, you know, the formula of what it is to work together. So we, you know, it would be easy to just put an ad out for the best drummers in here or there, but that's not an honest or tangible sort of chemistry, right? I mean, it can be, but for what we do as ritualists and as traditionalists of particular religions, you know, we wanted to show our performances to show that we're a tribe, we're a cohesive unit, We're friends. And so that obviously comes across. And so that's how we, you know, formed and, you know, was never meant to be a very big thing.
Well, and he's trying to get a hold of me. You know, what's going on?
That's okay. Now, if it rings more than, you know, if it rings more than just a minute or two, you probably need to answer it. So, understandable.
So, yeah, that's how the Dragon Ritual Jumpers were formed. There was mostly just something we wanted to do in our men's circle. And because a couple of us were already fairly good on them and we were managing to put together this band, and now it's become, you know, a passion and a lot of hard work.
Definitely. Well, have you guys ever performed, and this is going to sound like a really ridiculous question, but have you guys ever performed at any of like the Renaissance festivals? Do you get asked out to those, to do any of those?
We've been asked to play a lot of Renaissance festivals, like especially several years ago, we toured a lot. Like we used to drive really for every, you know, we just all had the unique job opportunities where people were able to take time off work. Different era when there was a better economy, you know, and everybody had this before the big crash, I suppose, or right around that era. And so we were driving, you know, every other weekend somewhere 9-10 hours away. And then people started flying us around. But the thing of it is we never played a Renaissance festival simply because there was really no purpose in it for us. Like our goal was to definitely expose ourselves to the niche community of what we belong to, the conjure and you know, Caribbean African traditional religious community and the neo-pagan community, large events. You know, so there, once we realized, okay, now we are, you know, we're touring, we're performing, we're running a machine now. You know, the only thing we really deviated from was to play like private weddings, you know, with pagan people or people within our religions that wanted us to be at the wedding. But we never really played many, we didn't play any Renaissance festivals because we were, even though we were taking a lot of time off to travel and tour, we wanted to be very specific where we were traveling and touring. So if we all had to quit our jobs and all had to been lived, well, yeah, we had been playing Renaissance festivals galore, right, to fill in the blanks. And we discussed that back in a certain point. We were looking and doing the math and the crunchy numbers. How much is your mortgage? How much you got to make a year? And we just look and see, like, if I book this starting next year, you know, would we all make what we have to? But we never got there, so we never played Renaissance festivals. But I've definitely been to a few of them and do enjoy a lot of the music performed there.
Yeah, I ask that because we have a couple of large ones in the area here, and they seem to be growing. It seems like there's more that have sprouted up. If you're familiar with the Council of Magical Arts, you probably know about the Scarborough Fair, which is down in Waxahachie. And then in the Houston area, you have the big Texas Renaissance Festival. It's like one of the largest in the nation. Now they've got one down near San Antonio called Sherwood Fair or something like that. They're cropping up everywhere. So it seems that seems to be a popular thing. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. And lots of pagans, right? Pagans that do vend, you know, specifically, they live between pagan festival to Renaissance festival. Yeah, I know. It's the same up here, right? It's definitely the case.
Exactly. My besom came from a company that was strictly on the Ren Faire circuit. We're talking three generations worth of. That's all they do. So I was just kind of curious because you do see a lot of pagan people that turn out for those kinds of things.
We almost went to that big, huge one. It was a Pensac or whatever they call it, the big battle in Pennsylvania, the huge SCA event. That's that thing. Well, one of the people we knew very well was a king in that world and had a camp in, and we almost went to that one, which is the giant war, right? Where it's like 10,000 people there. They're 1,000 guys fighting 1,000 guys or 1,000 people fighting 1,000 people. You know, we almost went to that.
That would have been fun. So what is your favorite drum that you've ever worked with? Your personal, if you had to choose one drum to play for the rest of your life, that would be the most to you sanctity wise, like sacredness, what would you choose?
Oh, that's brutal. It's like a tough one.
No, that was coming
but
at you.
I guess I mean my I would probably choose a djembe because it would at least enable me to play things very similar. One of my absolute favorite drums to play is the dumbek, the Middle Eastern dumbek. So that to me is like driving a Porsche or a Ferrari. You know, it's so fast. And what my particular style of drumming, when I can play really something really fancy and fast, the Doombeck is like, it's just unbelievable. You know, what I can do to it, what I've seen some of the best drummers in the world can do to it, it's so unique. And that's always been my favorite drum to play because it's so, it just is something. And it's a drum specifically for people to dance to. And, you know, it's just, that's one of my favorite drums other than the djembe. You know, and but it'd be hard for me to pick. But if I had to, gun to the head, I'd just go with the djembe because it would be something that would be, I could play almost anything similar, you know, but I'd still try to grab a few other and say, just let me take these ones too.
Just sneak another one under the shirt. Well, let me, you had mentioned when we talked before, kind of during the course of the video, something about feeding the drum. Can you talk to that a little bit? What does that mean? How do you properly care for an instrument? I'm sure the care varies depending on the instrument, the materials it's made from, but in terms of the sacred drum, something you're using strictly for shifting your consciousness, something for ritual, how do you care for that?
Well, so it's the idea of feeding it. So earlier I was describing how, you know, it's something that not only is it a tool that will shoot out the sound of our hitting it, right? But it also, because of that, excuse me, this fan is falling over. Because of that, we, you know, it's a drum that is absorbing our physicality. You know? So let's just say this, it's hand drums in specific that we're playing. So anything that you're putting your that much energy into, again, if we're ritualists and or so we're taught this in many traditions anyway, that you now are treating that vessel with reverence, respect, and giving it sustenance. So the sustenance can vary tradition to tradition. Sometimes there's an elaborate initiation rituals for specific drums where, you know, the offering would be essentially blood from, you know, a ritual sacrifice that is probably going to be eaten to some degree, depending on what's happening. And so, you know, which is the case in especially in Ifa, you know, if there's pastor's rites, we usually are eating the food of the animal whose blood has been used. I know it's not something people like to hear, but it's reality. You know, if we're going to eat meat, you know, and specifically for certain passage rites, then it's better to take the responsibility of that meat. And so that is what it is. But you can also feed it, you know, with, you know, liquids, food. So one of the ways that I like to, I wish there's, I'm trying to think of a small drum within my reach to try to explain that. If you give me one sec, I'll bring a drum in. I can give you a demonstration. Hang on. Let me walk in the other room here. Okay, so I got the strangest drum, but it's one I can think I can hold up that you can see in the picture, right? So as you can see, the drum is a body. I'm looking right now, this is a Doombeck, a Remo Doombeck, but it looks very much like a djembe too. So you have the body of the drum. You have the head of the drum, which we hit. And then you have the mouth of the drum. So in our traditions, drums that have a mouth and a body and a head, when we feed them primarily by spraying liquid across the head, not the mouth, not right into it, but it's the essence of taking liquid. It doesn't have to be alcohol. Traditionally, it is to some degree. And you spray it from your mouth across there to feed it because that's where the noise is coming out. That's where the spirit enters. And so now you're giving it that sort of, you know, you can also feed it by rubbing, you know, cream if it's applicable on the head, Florida water very popularly because it evaporates really nicely. It cleanses it. It gives the drum. If we put Florida water on our head and our shoulders and spirit to cleanse us up a little bit, well, that's the same thing to the drum because the drum is, it has a body. And if you have given it a name and happen to be able to do part of the passage rites where you sort of birth your drum so that it has a name and a personality, then now you want to look after it. And another way too is a lot of times in our couple of the traditions I belong to is very similar. We lay the drum down on the ground or on a mat and place food that we like So if we like chips and we like Coca-Cola or we like fruit and nuts, you put a little plate of it right at the mouth here and some liquid, you like water, whatever it is, and then you cover it in white material in your shrine room and you leave it overnight like that. And what that does is it helps sustain. Now, for some people, they'll do that before a big ceremony coming up, 3-day ceremony. They'll feed the drums for a couple of days beforehand so that when they arrive, the drum is vibrant, it's filled, it's good to go. And then, you know, it's going to give you the energy. It won't just suck your energy out. It'll give back. It becomes that give back. And then even at our events in for example, in Voodoo or in Lakumi or even Ifa, you know, in the middle of the ceremony, specific clergy, specific person will walk up and feed your drums while you're playing them. Spray rum or spray gin or pour libations out along the area where the drums are to give them that reverence because the drums are working. They're called certain names. They're birthed. So even though what I'm describing is to some degree, you know, some of it would be like initiatory mysteries, but not the way I just described it as far as how to just treat your drum by, you know, anointing it sometimes, feeding it, whatever you like across the bottom of the mouth so that it gets a little something, you know, it's thirsty. And the more you think about your drum that way, it becomes, and you call it a name, you know, so there's ways to go through that. And then now you have, you know, connected and bonded and given the drum, you know, it's like for pagans, it's like consecrating your athame, your wand, you know, it's a way to, you know, give it a personality, a name, a power, and the drum is the same way. So that's how ultimately the best way to feed it is to just spray it sometimes across the bottom, you know, and the idea of spraying it from your mouth is because you're sharing your essence from you to it. And it's and also spraying is also diffusing it. Your mouth now is a diffuser. You know, sprays across there, and so it sort of is more, it's a bit more sacred, sort of, so one could say. And then, yeah, if you rub certain oils at times on it and treat it like a living entity and a consecrated entity, then it will play better for you. And I've, you know, that's come across many people doing the basic thing I just showed at a workshop at a festival. And the next thing you know, I'll see those people later, like, man, I can't play my drum anymore without giving it rum. Like, God damn it. You know, and says it wants it all the time, you know, and it's like, well, good. Then give it to it. Then that's what's working.
It's a drum.
Well, just a shot, you know, it is what it is.
Don't overdo it, right? Don't overdo it. So what are your plans in future in terms of Dragon Ritual Drummers? Do you guys have any events coming up where people could come and learn? Do you do workshops on drumming that people can attend? Or
I do when I'm at, when I'm traveling by myself or with the band or something, at events, mostly down south, of course. I do a workshop. I actually do an entire workshop / ceremony of feeding the drum, birthing it, and doing all that. You know, it's two parts, really fun. And did that a couple of years ago with Baba Ted Jow in Michigan. You know, he wanted to collaborate with that ritual. I showed him. He was like, oh, I love it. Because it is, comes out of the voodoo spiritual temple to some degree as far as the openness of it. But believe it or not, the Dragon Ritual Drummers, we just played a jazz festival and we played a couple of streaming events before that. We're done for the year. We are literally done for the year because the border is not open as of now. It's, you know, this is going to be aired in July. As of July 2021, the border is still not open. We're not planning on being in the States at all. There are no events happening in Canada. We're still very much under, just fresh out of a several month shutdown. Population is not completely vaccinated. Events aren't really happening in large numbers at all. So we're done for the season now. You know, not even streaming. We did all the streaming ones that we did earlier starting in March. So we've had a busy year already, and it's June and July, and we're over. Next year, probably we'll get out to a couple of events, depending on how the world climate is. Maybe something near Halloween we might do. It really depends. But for now, not much. But if people go on to my, you know, Lutu Witch Doctor Facebook or Dragon Ritual Drummers, any social media site, if there's something happening, that's where you'll know, because I'll post it, talk about it. But we kind of just entered or exited our busy season's over. It's hard to believe.
So what are you going to do with yourself with all this free time?
Same thing I've been doing under Ontario has been in a shutdown since December and only opened for a little bit in March, then it was shut down again until about 2 weeks ago. So we're still in a bit of a situation up here, that's for sure. And So, you know, the fact that we actually got to play at all, even streaming, or when we did the Jazz Festival last weekend, which will be streamed in partnership with the New Orleans Jazz Festival, which is really cool. But the one up here, yeah, we played on a stage. They had a sound crew, but they were far away, a film crew. They had it all set up. We showed up, walked past everybody, went on the stage, played, left, exited the property. So that's pretty much how our shows have been thus far. We're setting up in one of our guys' yards, which is beautiful. We set up the cameras ourselves, film the performance, send it to the event that you know, gave us money to do it. And so that's, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. We've talked about it. We're probably going to spend the late summer. I got to remember, too, like right now, as things are opening up in Ontario, no one's going to see each other. Like, everyone's back to work or have their own business. It's going to be chaos. When we blink, it'll be October. Like, it's going to about to be nuts here. We're in the Niagara region. It's a tourist town. So it's about to be out of control here. So just as well, we got nothing planned. And then, but in the autumn, we were discussing, we're going to get together and spend more time, you know, rehearsing, writing, putting things together for some other stuff to release, you know, because it's been a crazy year, you know, so we haven't really done much.
Is that a new album coming out?
There's an entire one almost done. We just, you know, it's, again, the reality is, since this pandemic hit, sure, we were able to find a way to adjust and play several streamed events, but as far as, you know, creating or doing that kind of work, it just hasn't been time. Everyone's been trying to scramble to keep their lives together and survive under these unbelievable conditions we have. So it's been a crazy year. We're gonna need a year off almost just to recuperate from keeping it together for this pandemic year. It's been nuts.
Well, and we're having an issue here where, like, you know, I had told them I'm a speech language pathologist is my day job, and I had told my assistant that we were going to be masking with patients until the state reach herd immunity. That was obviously not going to happen. They're saying now that it looks like they don't think the state of Texas will ever reach herd immunity because there are so many people coming into the state and so many people that are choosing not to vaccinate. Why would you do that?
That's how it is up here. It's how it is everywhere. You know, right now, whatever reason, that's just reality. You know, like, yeah, are we ever going to get there? No. So, who knows what's going to happen? I know it's
crazy. And with the new strains that are out that are even more virulent, it's kind of scary. It really is, in terms of, you know, I have a knucklehead daughter that won't go get her daggum vaccine. I don't understand what the problem is with her. She's the only holdout in the family. I don't know how to convince her she needs to go get this done. And I'm afraid she's going to end up getting sick or getting somebody else sick, which is worse. Yeah. So,
hopefully, I know at some point, probably from what I can tell, by the end of this summer, like say September, the end of September, at that point, honestly, in the Western world, if you know, whoever hasn't gotten vaccinated at that point, that's their prerogative. But at that point, well, you're on your own, because the rest of the world, you know, has to get back to work. And, you know, so at that point, it's been available to everybody. So, you know, let the cards fall as they may.
I agree. And I've told her, I said, you need to stop being a knucklehead and just get out there and get her done. Because, you know, she's part of the reason why I don't want to get out amongst anybody. I'm like dying for human contact.
Well, if everybody else is vaccinated, I mean, that does bring up the conundrum here. It's like, you know, it's been available. So at this point, who isn't vaccinated? Who are we trying to protect? Everyone's had an option. Get it? So at that point now, I mean, I'm one of those people that says, okay, it's been long enough. By the end of this summer, once Canada catches up, you know, I don't see the purpose of any restriction, honestly. At that point, everyone's had an option to do it. And if at that point, the entire population is vaccinated, but it's still not protecting us, then what's the point of getting it?
We're in trouble anyway.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of craziness going on out there, questions. But for me, I just can't wait till things get back to normal.
Exactly. I need that contact. I need those drumming circles again. Getting out there and enjoying the community that is the pagan community, you know, and the Council of Magical Arts. I'm glad you brought them up. They are a fantastic organization that operates down here in this area. Not as much in the Denton, Collin County area, but in the Fort Worth area and Tarrant County. They're very large. Tarrant, Oxahatchee, they had a big booth out there. And I think they even went down to Austin right before COVID broke out. They had a booth down at a festival down there in Austin, and it was good to see everybody out and about. But you know, the, I think that one of the things that drum circles do for us as a community is that bringing us together and getting us into one mindset together. We kind of all march to the beat of that one drum for the moment being, at least, and it allows us to connect on a level that's different than just a traditional get together, you know, kind of thing. I really think it alters our state of being and our consciousness and allows us to slip into almost a liminal space. It takes us out of the physical and into that realm of where things happen, I guess.
It's the ultimate sorceress tool for sure, and sacred magical tool to expand our consciousness, allow us to enter in and out of trance. There's some cultures that attaining trance is simply not even remotely possible unless there is a drum presently playing. Right. So, and that's how it is. But again, there's global networks of multi-ethnic people teaching drumming for the specific purpose of unity and collaboration between people of religions and classes and cultures and countries, whatever it is. And if this woke mob of rejects tries taking that down, well, it won't be successful. It might ruin the party for a few people in America, which is the only place this asinine shit's taking place. But, you know, at the end of the day, good luck, because the only people they're going to affect are the overwhelmingly, like, the leaders of these movements and drum circles and the courses that they teach people is all ethnic men and women. You know, they're all people from, you know, various parts of Africa, Asia, South America.
Yeah.
Those are the people trying to unite the world right now. And one of the best ways to do it is through drumming. And so, again, for every reason we just discussed of the heartbeat being in the womb, how it's a part of the human condition, how it's been a part of the human condition for thousands and thousands of years, it is the ultimate unifier. And it has always been. It's what is one of the, you know, it's the most primal part of music, and being the drum. And therefore, it will always be the bridge builder, and or the actual bridge built between peoples, is be through the language of the drum. And so there are many prophecies, many poetic, you know, colloquialisms within traditions about that, that the drums unite the people, that's the drums doing the work. You know, it's very romantic when you think about it. And that's why I love, that's why I've had gun to the head. How would I choose one? They're all my kids. I can't let them, you know, I got to have them all. It's Noah's Ark in here.
Well, let me ask you this then, as a kind of a wrap it up sort of question. If you are new to drumming and you know nothing about drumming and you think you have no musical talent whatsoever, is there a drum you would recommend? A specific drum that's easy to learn, easy to manage, easy to care for? What would you recommend and where should they start?
Yeah, most people, like something that looks a lot like this one that I had. So it's got a synthetic head. It's not too big, but it's got the bowl. It's got the bowl shape, you know, the hourglass shape here. Very nice sound coming out of it, you know, a bass, a tap. It's synthetic, and it looks like a djembe. It's Doombeck, falls in between. So that's the thing that are relatively affordable. Most music stores sell a synthetic drum that is looks very similar to that, that you can play and not have to worry about dropping it. Don't have to worry about the climate, you know, outside, the different types of weather, temperatures. And that's the best thing, is just get something that's not too expensive at first. Because some people, you know, you never know. Like, you know, some people, they really want to gravitate towards playing congas. That's another thing altogether. Some of the, you know, more exotic drums that most people don't know what they are that are in the traditions I play for. But for the most part, if someone's into the drum circle situation, they're probably going to end up with something that resembles a Doombeck or a djembe. And so get one that's at first cheap. If someone won't lend you one, I've lent people on ones that I have that are fairly, you know, indestructible. Let them borrow it for a while, and then they decide, okay, you know what, this is the kind of drum I want. I've taken many people to the drum store. You know, if it's natural, I take them to my friend Saiku, who's from he's from Guinea, and we go into Toronto into his drum store. He's an African drum master, and you know, I go with the people, and we say, all right, these are all the ones you should choose from, and then they play them, and eventually, you know, get them. So try something, you know, affordable and to some degree can handle a little bit of damage just in case. And then once a person, you know, go to drum circles, find one that's happening, you know, some of them are good, some of them are bad, you know, but if it's a passion, there's so many drummers these days kicking around that you'll end up at a drum circle or at some festival. And then you sit and try to join that noise. There's always room for improvement. Every festival I've gone to, there's only a few that really fully do it right, you know, which meaning that they situate the drummers for the open revel fire every night in a certain way. And that way, you know, everyone gets, you know, in an area where everyone can hear each other. And, you know, so that's another thing I usually do at events as well, is I'll have a workshop about that type of etiquette. You know, how can we sit together, play so we can all, and ultimately we're playing for those dancers so they can hear it, and how to encourage people from, no matter what drum you have, if you're willing to sit down and enjoy yourself, you will add to that sound. It's just that, you know, you got to sometimes bust through the egos of some of the guys that run the drum circles. It's all about them and how loud and fast they are. And, you know, I'm too old for that shit anymore. And I never really was all about that. I was taught very well to be like, be the person that holds it all together. And if it's ego you're looking for, well, you'll still be the most popular person because you've had the best drum circle that you've organized. And whatever it is you're looking for, I'll be waiting for you afterwards, you know. So, and it's true, you know, at the end of the day, you know. So I've done it before many times. You know, the Florida Pagan Gathering flew myself and a couple of my guys down a few years ago because they had nobody that was going to drum at the Revel Fire. And so I said, I've done it lots of times. So I put out a bunch of posts in their community group. I don't care how quiet, how weird your drum is. If you only got a tambourine and maracas, you show up, you can be part of the drum circle for the people around the fire that night. Because there used to be a group of people that were so ferocious, spectacular African style drumming, you know, all white people. Yeah, right. That would have been perfect. And so the same thing, I got everyone to show up because, you know, and that night had everyone sit in a certain way. And even though most of those people never thought they would have drummed at the drum circle because the people that were doing it previous were, like I said, trained spectacular drummers. But so a lot of people said, well, I can never do that. And then, lo and behold, you know, there it was, you know, a bunch of people playing all night, well, for a few hours at least, you know, no matter what they had. If you provide a simple rhythm that everyone can play to, that's the most important thing. Demonstrating unity and fraternity through rhythm, as opposed to who's the best, who's the fastest, who's the loudest, it doesn't matter. If your small cohesion of ragtag people are playing everything from cans and doombecks and shakers and stuff, and now you have it at a fire, at a festival that people have paid to, people dancing to that sound, mission accomplished.
Absolutely.
Community achieved.
That is the goal. So with that, I will say thank you so much for coming on with me today. And I hope that in future we can meet up somewhere and have some time to hang away.
As soon as this border opens.
There you go. Yes, please.
So, well, thank you so much. You take care of yourself.
Thank you.